Learning to ride a bike without training wheels is just like listening to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The podcast that spreads sunshine and joy all across the Medicare landscape. He always presses two for Esperanto. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast again, just like it is three times a week at about this time, or maybe a different time if you tend to listen at a different time. I'm Doug Jones, as you just heard my Canadian nephew say. It's wonderful to be with you today. This is, as I said, Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And the first thing I like to do is thank my nephew, Drew McMillan, who is always the one who introduces these episodes. And I used to be able to say he's a famous Canadian entertainer with his own TV show, but it looks like his TV show is coming to an end after 20 years. I hope it wasn't Drew that killed it. So I'll have to wait to see what kind of a show business career he steps into next. I'm sure it'll be something rewarding, funny, entertaining, and remunerative, I would like to think. The other thing I'd like to do is introduce myself. I'm your Medicare expert, as Drew said. I've been doing this a long time. I don't know everything there is, and I probably never will, but I like to direct my advice to the lazy people in the audience, since it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. What we're doing here is we're helping people who really don't want to study Medicare in any meaningful, time-consuming way. We're helping them feel comfortable and with the transition from normal life to Medicare life. And we're hoping to have them ask us to sell them the Medicare supplements that will protect them against financial disaster in the future for a small amount of money every month or a medium amount of money once per year. They can be protected from financial doom and gloom for quite some time through the means of a Medicare supplement and a prescription drug plan. So those lazy people are really not so lazy. They just know how to use their time better than people who enjoy studying Medicare. So what we have now is Randy Carson, my favorite dial twister and bon vivant, who sits on the other side of the screen here. Randy, are you doing okay today?
I am doing just fine. Probably not as good as you are. You're looking particularly dapper and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Well, I do get dressed up formally for these sessions, and so
I know.
I'm trying to impress you, and I'm glad it's working.
Where do you get a hold of all those tuxes?
they're good from the neck down to the waist, and then you don't see the rest of the cutoffs that I'm wearing. And frankly, the real problem I have that I'm having trouble getting acquainted with is my big boy microphone. Last time I plugged it in, it did not work in Illinois, and so I've had to use the chintzy microphone they build into my There's something going on your side of the screen. Sounded like a chipmunk chewing on furniture.
Oh, that's my anti-coughing drop.
Oh, I didn't see anything moving in your head, so I didn't think it was you. So anyway, I've got to find some way to fix my professional microphone so I can use it again. I feel lost because I'm just talking to you like we would be having a beer, but I know that there's sound going into an orifice somewhere here that will come out on the other side in a couple of weeks, and it's just very confusing not to have my microphone in front of me.
So are you making any progress as to why your big boy mic is not miking?
Yes. Every time I think about the next step in that process, something happens. The phone rings or an email comes in. So somebody says, I want to buy my Medicare insurance from you, and I get sidetracked. So yeah. Yes, I have made progress. I think what I'm going to do is remove the cord from the big arm, the multiple directional arm that the microphone's mounted on, and measure that cord, and then buy another one with a different ending that will go into my switcher. Is that a switcher that I use? Yeah.
Now I'm drawing a blank as to what that thing's called.
Two blanks. This is going to be an entertaining episode.
Oh my God. What is that thing called? I don't know. It'll occur to me, but you're not going to be the least bit disappointed, Doug, because I have in my hand.
Yes.
Since yesterday afternoon in a peanut butter jar on Funkin' Wagnall's porch.
Oh, I sense a stumpy expert coming.
Some questions for Stump Doug Jones, the Medicare expert dude.
So this tells me that Dominic has been busy sharpening his pencils and getting to work on more material for you. Is that correct?
Yes, we have. We actually, Dominic has signed up to be a full-time writer for us. So,
okay, is there room in the budget? That sounds expensive, and I'm not sure I want to fork over a lot of dough just for you making me look like an ignoramus every episode.
No, he said he'd do it for free. He enjoys it so much.
Oh, boy, he and my wife want to get together.
So here we go. Number one.
All righty.
You have very little chance of getting this. But, you know, I'm always amazed at what you do come up with because you always score pretty well. So here we go.
I'm ready.
Considering that Mr. Jones often needs to wear his falconry gloves when digging to the bottom of the MLM mailbag. As you know, a falconer is the term used for a person who flies a falcon. What is the name of a person who flies a hawk?
Leonard.
No.
Okay. That would be a hawkmeister.
Hawkmeister.
No. Oh, boy. Is this going to be one of these oddball Middle English words that we haven't heard?
No, it's actually French.
Oh, boy.
The name of a hawk flyer is an Ostringer.
I would never have gotten that. And I don't know why there would be a difference. Do they behave differently? So you got to have different skills.
Well, I suppose it's been a long time since I flew a hawk, but that's what they do call them, a different name. But I do honestly believe that a falcon is a very different type of a bird than a hawk in terms of their speed capabilities. Did you know that a falcon, here's your fun fact for falconry.
That Wait a when minute. They say that again three times real fast.
Fun fact for falconry.
You didn't even know that was going to happen, did you?
No, I didn't. Okay. But just so you know, a falcon, when they're up high and they're coming down, like, you know, dive bombing for something, you know, like a bird down below them, and they're sneaking in on them from up or high.
Like I would like a chipmunk because we're overrun with them this year.
Yeah. Well, a falcon, when they're coming down through the atmosphere, their speed will exceed 150 to 160 miles an hour.
What about hawks?
12 miles an hour. I don't know.
Well, there's a reason I ask. I'm not just idly, this is not idle curiosity here, but as you know, we live in Arizona, beautiful Arizona, most of the year, or as much of the year as I'm allowed to. And I was told by our builder who is rebuilding the inside of the house we're in now that we're trying to sell, that a funny thing happened. Not a funny ha-ha, but a funny odd thing happened. This was, I'm thinking 5-6 years ago. The workman got to the house, opened the door, and a gust of air came out the front door at him. This was wintertime. It was not real snowy, not real cold, but probably November-ish. So they said, holy crap, what's going on here? Why is there a big gust of air coming out through the front door? And so they started walking around the house, and there was a trail of feathers and bird poop. And it's a big house. And so this trail, they followed this trail around for a long time and eventually went into the master bedroom And there was a hawk or falcon, I don't know which, hanging by from the drapes by his claws, staring at them. And what had happened, in a different room, he had been diving, just like you were describing, heading towards the ground, aiming at prey, at something that he was going to kill. And he, it turned out to be a thermopane window.
Oh.
A Pella thermopane window.
Pella. We talked about Pella earlier.
We sure did.
So they are hawk-proof.
Well, they're not hawk-proof because he flew right through. There was about an 18-inch diameter hole. Not diameter. 18-inch circumference. This diameter is probably 10-inch. Big round hole in the glass. Both panes. Yeah. And he wound up in the house. Now, they figured that was early in the weekend after everybody went home because he had time to trail his feathers and bird poop all the way through the house. And then months later, I was sitting on the bed in the master bedroom talking to the spousal unit, probably being lectured, I suppose. And all of a sudden, I noticed something shiny. You know how we talk about shiny things distracting us? This bird spent a great deal of time taking her costume jewelry from a container up on top of the dresser and hiding it on the floor underneath the dresser. And
oh my gosh.
I never would have seen it if I hadn't sat down on the foot of the bed to get yelled at for whatever I did the day before or the year before. And all of a sudden I noticed, hey, all your costume jewelry is underneath your dresser. Did you put it there? No, that's stupid. Why would I put it there?
Oh my gosh, that is a great story, Doug.
I'll send you the pictures to show you the hole in the window and the hawk hanging from the draperies. And it was
I'd love to see it.
Quite a detective story to solve that mystery until they saw the hawk, actually.
Okay, well, that is a great story. I do have one more stump the insurance expert question.
Lay it on me.
Now, this one, I don't know. I would like to think that you would do well with this one, but I don't know. But today of June 17th, 1885, what arrived in New York?
Statue of Liberty.
I knew you would know this.
You told me I was going to bomb both of them, so you didn't know squat. You liar. You liar.
You did so well. So well. Oh, my gosh.
You thought I was going to bomb both of them, and I actually got 50-50, which I'm okay with. I can deal with it.
You always get at least 50-50. Obviously, you've got 100% several times, but you're always pretty well good for 50-50.
Well, I'll tell you what, if we want to bore the audience so they don't bother us anymore with their listening habits, we could play trivia, the Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah. So my daughter, and now this is quite a compliment, but it was coming from a four-year-old at the time. She says, my dad, I love trivia. I love trivial information.
Yeah.
She told somebody, one of our friends or relatives or neighbors or something, she goes, my dad knows everything.
Well, that's great when they're four. When they're about 12 or 13, that goes away.
And they know nothing. They know nothing.
In my case, I was that feeling of love was renewed because when she was 20, she came in and apologized for being a little shit all of her teenage years. So that was
that hasn't happened yet in my case, but.
Oh, boy. Well, someday, we can only hope someday that it will. And I realize we can't play Trivial Pursuit because that would put Dominic out of a job. We can't have that.
I'm gonna have to ask Dominic to load me up with some more questions. But in the meantime, you know what I'm gonna do?
You're gonna tell me that it's time to get down to business, and
we need to get out the hammer and go after it. Get her done.
I will do that. Now I've been really really busy, so I haven't done a lot of preparation, but. Fortunately, we have a friend of the show named Steve, and Steve, we should put him on a payroll as the one of the writers because he has actually been responsible for a great deal of our content. Just his curious questioning, and more recently, his becoming my my valued client. He has a Medicare supplement and a drug plan. Now, actually, he got his own drug plan because he followed the instructions that Randy and I put in the book with the screenshots of the pictures and the directions. Steve went out and got his own drug plan. He was able to compare all of the drug plans available in his county and then pick the one that was least expensive. But now he's got an interesting problem that I've never really run into before. Intellectually, I guess I knew that this could be a problem for some people. Leave it to Steve to actually run full bore right into this problem. But he wrote to me, this was a while back, a couple of days ago, I think. He said, "I'm probably missing something here." He said, "It seems like you have doctors who accept Medicare and accept consignment, meaning that they will bill Medicare." I think he means assignment. He said, "Now I run into two terms, consignment and assignment." Well, there is no consignment, so he's a little confused there. But he says, "Not accepting assignment means that he can charge up to 15% more than Medicare approved amount. Plan G and high deductible plan G will cover this extra amount. I'm thinking that my doctor is both of these," which makes him like a Siamese twin, I guess. He said, "So I would have to file a CMS 1490S form. Finally, there are doctors who don't mess with Medicare, meaning that you go searching for them in the Medicare database and they aren't there. I have one of those as well." So then he sent a link to the Medicare database. It's so long, I'm not going to bore the audience with it. He said, "When you see a non-participating provider, you may have to pay the limiting charge in addition to your copay. The limiting charge can add up to 15% of the Medicare approved amount to your bill. If your provider has opted out of Medicare, the limiting charge does not apply and your provider can bill any amount he chooses. If I see an opted out doctor, will Medicare pay anything? Will Plan G cover 15% of the additional, even if the additional is more than 15%? He said, "I know these are some complicated questions, but I have both of these situations and I probably need to make some decisions on these providers." Well, he caught me on a day when I was so busy that I was unable to actually answer his questions, give any thought to him, or do any real serious research. So while I was on hold on another call, I reached for my copy of Medicare for Dummies. And I have that to do research with because, unlike my book, which is eminently readable in a short period of time and eminently understandable, this thing, this is a monstrosity that's over 400 pages long. And it's full of minutiae and detail that one will never, ever need to encounter in real life. However, that makes it good for research. So, under a section called Finding Doctors Who Accept Medicare Patients, I found a section that addressed Steve's problem. And this says, the great majority of primary care doctors, 93%, still do participate in the Medicare program, with fewer, this is 72%, saying that they are accepting new Medicare patients. It didn't occur to me. When I tell people that in the low 90 percentile of people, doctors accept Medicare, I completely forgot that a lot of them might not be looking actively for new Medicare patients. And that's what's happened in Arizona with the Mayo Clinic. They don't take new Medicare patients, but I don't think it's accurate to say they don't take Medicare. Anyway, so 72% of all doctors say they are accepting new Medicare patients. And that was a study that the Kaiser Family Foundation did 5 years ago. So who knows what it is today. Anyway, so there are three or four places to get doctors. You can use the doctor directory on the Medicare website. You can contact your state medical association. You can consider using a nurse practitioner for your primary care. They're like almost a doctor. And you can get Medicare treatment from an urgent care if you need it, or medical treatment covered by Medicare from an urgent care or walk-in medical center. So then the section goes on to say, understanding what your doctor can charge you. when you're enrolled in traditional Medicare and need to see any doctors for the first time, they always ask, or you should always ask their offices when you call to make an appointment, whether they accept Medicare patients, and if so, whether they accept assignment. That's because their answers to these questions could really affect how much you pay. And remember, there is no consignment, Steve. It's only assignment. So there are three categories here. Assignment is a doctor who accepts Medicare assignment, and he's agreeing to charge you no more than the amount that Medicare has approved for a particular service. This is why all these codes exist. When you hear about coding, it's because everything that a doctor can do has a code number. So he says you're basically assigning Medicare to pay the doctor for your care. In this situation, Medicare pays 80% of the approved amount because you're outpatient and it's covered under Part B. And so you're responsible for the remaining 20% unless you have supplemental insurance that pays your share. The second of the three categories is no assignment. A doctor who accepts Medicare patients but does not accept assignment can charge you up to 15% more than Medicare pays for the service you receive. You're responsible for the extra amount, and that's a balanced billing. In other words, the doctor will get 100% from Medicare, and the extra 15% they will bill you for. That's a balanced bill. Now, unless you have a Medigap policy, I don't like the word Medigap, but if you have a Medicare supplement policy or other insurance policy that covers the excess charges, then you're good to go. And the final category is a doctor who's opted out. A doctor who's opted out of Medicare cannot bill Medicare for the services that you receive and is not bound by Medicare's limitation on charges. You enter into a private contract with the doctor, agreeing to pay his bills directly and in full. You cannot claim reimbursement from Medicare under the arrangement. So if the doctor accepts assignment, let's say the doctor's bill is $120, and he accepts assignment, then Medicare approved amount might be $100, 100 of that 120. So then Medicare pays 80% of that Medicare approved amount. You pay 20%, or your Medicare supplement pays 20%. Or if you do what I recommend and have a high deductible Medicare supplement, then they credit your deductible with the remaining 20%. And you write a check for $20. On the other hand, you might have saved $100 that month by actually having a high deductible Medicare supplement plan. Now, if you have a doctor that does not accept assignment, the doctor's bill would be the same $120. The Medicare approved amount would still be $100. Medicare would pay 80%. And then you would have to pay 20% or your Medicare supplement. In addition, there's another 15% because that's what he is allowed to charge over and above the Medicare approved amount. So that'd be a total of $35 that you or your Medicare supplement would have to pay. And now that's a doctor who does not accept assignment, but yet he does have a relationship with Medicare. And the third one is a doctor who's opted out of Medicare. He might charge $120 for his visit, and you're going to be stuck paying the whole $120 because Medicare will not pay for services rendered by doctors who have opted out of Medicare. So they offer direct billing, those opted out doctors. Now there's another kind of doctor. It's getting more and more popular. I hear about them more often, but they provide concierge or boutique services. And what they do is they say, look, if you want to have primo service from my practice, then pay me a certain amount every year, and then I will put you on a list of priority patients. Now, you have to look carefully because they'll have you sign a contract. Some doctors who offer concierge case care also accept Medicare patients as long as those patients pay the extra fees. Medicare does not prohibit this practice, but Medicare officials warn that such doctors are not allowed to charge fees for any services that are already covered by Medicare, or to waive the Medicare deductibles and copays that normally apply. So I don't know what the significance of that is. But then if we go back to where Steve was, and Steve said he might have to use form CMS 1490S. Turns out that form is a claim form. I downloaded that from the internet, and it is a claim form that asks a lot of questions about the reasons that you got the treatment from the doctor. And only one thing about this confuses me. You have to, as the person who has the bill, the doctor's bill, and you want Medicare to pay it, the first question is, what is your reason for submitting this claim? And the options are, the provider refused to file a claim for Medicare covered services, or the provider is unable to file a claim for Medicare services. And the third option is the provider is not enrolled with Medicare. That would be one of those opted out doctors that we just talked about. And then the next section is if you, type of patient's request. And I don't get this one. There are two types that you can, one is influenza or pneumococcal vaccination under Part B, or durable medical equipment, prosthetics or orthotics and supplies. You got to pick one of those two. I don't know what the deal is there. That makes it sound like it's not just a regular Medicare claim form that you would submit for a doctor's treatment that wasn't covered by Medicare. The other thing about this form, it's, you can read it, it's like 6 pages, and then it has about 20 pages of addresses for each state where you would send this claim form, because they have subcontractors in most states that actually do the processing. What I enjoyed reading about was, and Randy probably enjoy this, if you're aboard a ship and you're more than, let's see, if you're more than 6 hours away from a U.S. port, then Medicare isn't going to cover you. You're SOL. And so that's where you would hope, if you had a medical emergency, that's where you would be very pleased to learn that the Medicare supplements that I sell people always include a benefit for offshore emergency. This would be emergencies that occur outside the United States, emergency treatment. But if you're on a ship that is within 6 hours of a U.S. port, then Medicare will cover you. Now, you got to have Part B as part of your Medicare coverage. The physician has to be legally authorized to practice in the U.S. And so that's, those would be the two things that would Medicare would look at. And then they'd say, okay, we'll pay that bill. If the ship is more than 6 hours away from a U.S. port, Medicare can pay for medically necessary services only if all of the following requirements are met. You have a medical emergency within 6 hours of departing or arriving at a U.S. port, and this requires inpatient hospital services. The nearest, number two, the nearest or most accessible hospital that can treat you is a foreign hospital rather than a U.S. hospital. Number three, the services are to treat the emergency illness or injury. Number four, you have Part B benefits. You're enrolled in Part B as well as Part A. Number five, the physician is legally authorized to practice wherever it is that he or she furnished the services. So that's it's nice to know when you go on a cruise that there are circumstances under which Medicare will pay for your emergency medical treatment. Does that make you feel better when you belly up to the buffet table?
I have a question, as I always do, right?
You and Dominic.
So 6 hours based on what?
Can you tell the captain to speed it up a little bit? We're 7 hours out. We got to get in there under the wire. So speed it up, will you?
So if you've got a cruise ship that, you know, is it holds somewhere around 3,000 to 4,000 people, you know, turning that on a dime is a little difficult, but I can just envision one of these cruise ships, you know, really kicking it in and being able to water ski off the back of this thing as we're cruising back to Miami.
Well, you know something, you can get form 1490S and check it out yourself, but it makes reference to the fact that it's 6 hours, either 6 hours from because you're headed out, or 6 hours away because you're headed back into port. It doesn't really say, you know, what if he makes a U-turn in the middle of the ocean and heads back. I'm not sure they would do that. for a sick passenger, would they?
No, they'd just kick him off the back. I mean,
or call in a helicopter, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, what if you really needed to get there in 6 hours, get yourself a helicopter. You'd be good to go.
Yeah.
But I do have one more question.
Oh, I'm not surprised to hear that.
All right. Concierge doctors.
Yes.
All right. I have a really, this is not a personal opinion of the doctors that use it, but I don't see any purpose in paying a doctor a monthly fee or an annual fee just to pretend like you're going to get better service, because you're not. I've had two of my doctors now, two of my personal physicians, decide they wanted to go concierge, and every time they call me, I go, "We're going to go concierge. What do you think of that?" And I go, "Nothing. Goodbye." I mean, why would you want to pay for a medical service that you're, in my case, and I'm fortunate, I agree, that, you're not going to use that often. Or, if you're going to try to make your money out of it, or what, are you going to take up residence in their office or what?
Well, as another point of view, speaking as the devil's advocate here, if I'm a doctor and I've busted my buns and I have tried to make a going practice, and finally I've gotten to the point where my wife can have that nose job that she's always wanted, all of these things, we can go on cruises and we can have a helicopter standing by. So I finally gotten to the point where my practice of medicine from the early years of all the sacrifice has gotten to be a financial windfall or whatever, certainly successful. Then the government steps in and says, well, we've got a budget problem this year, so guess what we're going to do? We're going to lower your reimbursement rate, or we're not going to increase it to keep pace with inflation. You might feel as though the government was dictating your income, and you might resent the fact that you can't operate as an entrepreneur. Like if you owned a store, you could charge whatever you wanted to for the widgets that you sold in the store. But if you're a doctor, honored, member of society, but you can't, the government will only pay you a certain amount and won't let you charge whatever you want to for services. I can see where that would be an appealing business model for the doctor to adopt. So that would be
that would be your dissenting opinion.
Well, it would certainly be my opinion as the devil's advocate. I'm not saying that I concur 100%, but frankly, ever since they started Medicare, they have had their little fingers in the private practice of medicine to an extent that old-time doctors would not tolerate.
Yeah, I get it. That's a very good point, Doug. Very good point. But you know what's happened?
The clock has run out, the crickets have chirped, and
all of those above, yes.
Add that to the other questions that I got right so that I actually have a preponderance of
yes. So you actually are running, very, very high percentages in the correct column today.
God, what a beautiful day. All righty. Well, then we should say go buy Medicare for the Lazy Man with the 2021 cover, the red 2021 on the cover. And buy that at Amazon.com or at BarnesandNoble.com.
Guess what else we got?
We got a website.
Guess what else we got?
We've got a podcast.
And we got an audiobook.
We got an audiobook. Yay! I'd forgotten about that.
See, it took us so long to get it. Mr. Jones, it has slipped totally out of his, recent memory banks.
Absolutely. There have been people buying that audiobook every couple of days. We sell a couple of books. And I'm pretty happy about that.
Are they using it for, drive to work time, listening, or go to sleep listening?
They're not using it for toilet paper. I can guarantee that much.
No, we're out of that. We've been out of that for years.
They're not hoarding it.
Oh, my gosh. So anyway, thank you, everyone, from the bottom of our little hearts for joining us today. We thoroughly enjoy it. You could have been 1,000 different places and you weren't. You spent some time with us, which we really appreciate. And you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy who has just recently moved cross country temporarily to his home in Illinois and with his best friend, Pugsley.
Pugsley. Oh, God. I can't wait for the next election. I'd like to see Pugsley get a comeuppance, but, you know, that'll follow the California recall election, I'm sure. Anyway, yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you, Randy, and thank you, audience, for joining us today. We'll see you soon.